America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Friday. It's the first hour of our program, noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. on the West Coast. And as always on Friday, our first hour committed to our Brunch with Bernie program. By the way, in our second hour, we're going to have Arthur D. Allies with Timothy Flynn. He's going to be talking about how horrible it is that Ford would put people above profits, specifically gay people. And in the third hour, Dr. Helen Caldicott is going to be with us about the arms race in outer space. But right now, Senator Bernie Sanders, he's neither a Democrat nor a Republican, an independent in the U.S. Senate. This month is the fourth year anniversary of this program, and it's about 3 years, Bernie, that you've been on this program every Friday.
And it's been a lot of fun, Tom.
We so appreciate it. It's just marvelous.
And I want to tell you that when I get around the country or even here in Vermont, it is amazing to me how many people listen to the program. So congratulations on all that you are doing, because it is absolutely imperative that we have progressive voices out there on the radio. And while we are outnumbered a lot by the right wing, you and others are doing a terrific and important job.
Well, thank you. Our telephone number is 866-303-2270. If you have a question for Bernie, he'll be taking your calls right after our first break. And if you want to drop into our live chat room, it's at tomhartman.com. There's a blog over at airamericaradio.com. Or airamerica.com as well. Bernie, the Gonzalez scandal, which I'm sure you have some thoughts on, has kind of pushed off the headlines what we were talking about a week ago, which was the disaster at Walter Reed and the meltdown of the subprime mortgage loan, which represents 20-25% of all mortgages in America, which is emblematic of the death of the middle class.
Right.
Can we kind of come back to those for a
minute?
Sure.
I mean, they're all out there. I mean, what Gonzalez is about is the understanding that we have an administration which will go down in history certainly as one of the worst administrations in the history of the United States, but specifically an administration which doesn't understand the Constitution, is not concerned about civil liberties. In this case, what they have tried to do is used their ability to appoint U.S. attorneys for political purposes, and that is a very frightening inroad, an attack on basic judicial rights and justice. What we want to know is that U.S. attorneys are acting on the facts, they're doing their best, and they're not being politically motivated to go after this group or not that group, or go slow and easy on this particular group for political reasons. I suspect you're going to see some very strong hearings in the Judiciary Committee, in the Senate, and the House. It's likely, I think, as I've heard, that Karl Rove will be up in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And I think that is long overdue.
You think that's actually going to happen, that they're not going to pull an executive privilege and be
successful? Well, we will see.
Holding out.
But if they run away from that, I think that only makes them look worse. I mean, what the American people voted for in November is a new day, and they wanted to hold this administration accountable in so many areas, certainly on the areas of civil liberties and using our U.S. attorneys for political reasons is certainly something that must be investigated.
Yeah, well said. And then the meltdown in the mortgage market
or the trembles. It's a funny thing. I am on the Senate Budget Committee, which just actually voted yesterday on a budget which is in a very different direction than the budget presented to Congress by the President. It doesn't go as far as I would like it to go, but it's a heck of a lot better. Being a member of the Senate Budget Committee, one of the things one does is hear from representatives of the administration, the Secretary of Treasury, the head of the Federal Reserve, Mr. Barnicky, and others. And when you are around those people, or many of the Republicans who are on the committee, what their line is over and over again is the economy is doing really well. It's doing, to quote the Secretary of the Treasury, it's doing marvelous. And yet you go out into the real world and you look at what's happening to the middle class of this country, and I know that you have been very strong, both in your writing and on this program, in articulating this, and it has to be said over and over and over again, is that despite a huge increase in technology in America, huge increase in worker productivity, the middle class is shrinking. Millions of people, people who are listening to the show right now, they're working longer hours for lower wages than they used to. People have lost pensions that were promised to them. People are losing their health care benefits or, in fact, losing health insurance completely. Working families can't find affordable, quality child care, so they're sending kids to places where kids are watching TV and getting off on a bad start in life. People can't afford to send their kids to college. People are losing their jobs because large corporations are throwing American workers out on the street, moving to China, hiring people there 30, 40 cents an hour, and on it goes. That's the reality. Meanwhile, poverty in America has increased by over 5 million since Bush has been president. So the middle class is shrinking, poverty is increasing, and the people on the top have never, ever had it so good since the 1920s. And on top of that, we have a president who says, oh, you're a millionaire and a billionaire, you're doing really good. Well, guess what? We're going to give you tax breaks. We're going to cut back for health care for our kids. We can't afford to do that. We're going to do away with nutritional programs for low-income senior citizens. Can't do that. We're not going to fund special education. Can't afford that. But you are a billionaire. Hey, it's your day. We are going to give you huge tax breaks. I've made this point before, and I want to make it again, that within the president's budget, and certainly one of his goals since he has been in office, is to repeal the estate tax. And the estate tax, as it now stands, applies only to the wealthiest 0.3% of the population. 99.7% of the families would not gain one nickel by the repeal of the estate tax. One family, the Walton family that owns Walmart, that family collectively would benefit by about $32 billion. Got that with a B. $32 billion through the repeal.
Which is a drop in the bucket for them, by the way.
Yeah, well, but when we want to have increased funding for our veterans, guys who are coming back with post-traumatic stress disorder from Iraq, well, we just don't quite have the funds for that. Or to deal with the needs of our children where we have the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world, we just don't have the money to do it. So I think the message for listeners is a pretty simple one. We, in fact, are the wealthiest country in the history of the world. Basic problem is the wealth has the wealth disparity, and it has moved in a very, very unfair way, so that you have the people on top owning more and more of our society, receiving more and more of the income that is being collectively earned, and that's an issue that we have got to address.
Yeah, well said. What's going on at Walter Reed? It's literally vanished from the newspapers ever since this Gonzalez gate thing.
Well, a couple of things are going on. I can't tell you that I'm an expert on all aspects of it. A decision was made a while back to phase down Walter Reed and move the facility to Bethesda. I think they thought they could run a more cost-effective operation by combining Bethesda with Walter Reed. Problem was that decision was made in the middle of a war where we now have 24,000 casualties, many of them serious, and we got PTSD on top of that, traumatic brain injury. So people are thinking, was that a smart idea? Should you be closing down the major health facility in the middle of a war? And there's some rethinking of that right now. Number two, as a result of privatization, as a result of bad management, there is no question that the outpatient care was totally and absolutely unacceptable. I visited this so-called Building 18. It's not a place that, you know, the healthiest person in the world would want to spend time, let alone if you've lost a leg or two or you're suffering some serious problems as a result of having served.
I've seen news reports that the private corporation to whom this stuff was outsourced has Dan Quayle is on its board of directors. I kid you not.
I don't know that. But, you know, that is part of Bush's overall effort of moving toward privatization. Now, if there's a silver lining in all of this, is that there is now growing consciousness about the problems, health problems, related to soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. I can tell you that as a member of both the Veterans Committee and the Budget Committee, we are providing substantially more money for our veterans, and I think that will eventually become appropriated.
That's great. It's Senator Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment, the first hour of every Friday. Senator Sanders will be taking your calls, 866-303-2270, right after this break, right here on the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. Stick around.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call
866-303-2270. Back. Helping you win the water cooler wars. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Friday. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders, neither a Republican nor a Democrat. He's an independent from Vermont, although I think of him as America's senator, taking your call. Our telephone number, 1-866-303-2270. And Paula in Eureka, California, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Tom and Senator Sanders. First, I wanted to say I really look forward to listening to the segment every week. You're both so full of information and intelligence. Senator Sanders, I was in the Navy, and I paid into the GI Bill. After I got out, I was a stay-at-home mom for 11 years, and then my marriage fell apart, and I decided to go back to school since I didn't have any marketable skills that would allow me to support my children. That's when I found out that I had lost my education benefits and the money I'd paid into the fund because I didn't use them within 10 years of being discharged. Nobody told us there was a 10-year cutoff date. It seems just another way of saying that vets don't matter when they are no longer useful. Why is there a cap to begin with, and is there anything in the works to change that?
Paula, well, thanks very much for that question, and that is just another example by which we are turning our backs on veterans. Here's an example of a woman who served, raised kids, and then wanted to continue her education and is unable to do so. Paul, my suggestion would be give your own senators or congressperson a ring, and that is an issue that I will look into. Right now, one of the things that we want to do, and I know Senator Jim Webb of Virginia has introduced legislation, essentially a GI Bill of Rights for the 21st century. Tom, you will remember that one of the most significant pieces of legislation that this country has had in the last 100 years was the GI Bill of Rights, which provided those soldiers who returned from World War II the opportunity to get an education, had a huge impact on intellectual capital in America, giving so many people the opportunity.
So my dad went to college. His family never could have paid for it.
That's right. And so many people were able to become professionals, teachers, play a huge role in every aspect of our life who otherwise would not have been able to afford to do that. And Paula raises a very, very important issue, which we will look at. Bottom line here is, no matter, and I hope people always remember this, no matter what one's view may be on a war, we do not blame the men and women who put their lives on the line doing what they have been told to do. And we treat them with respect, and certainly providing them with the educational opportunities that they will need is one of the things we have to do.
Great. Matt in Charlevoix, Michigan, listening on 750 AM. Charlevoix, the town where my mother grew up, where my father is buried, a town I've spent a lot of time in. It's great to hear from Charlevoix. Hey, Matt, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, that's an interesting story, Tom. I wondered about that because I believe you're from Grand Rapids.
Yeah, I was born in Grand Rapids, but my dad was from Grand Rapids, Newego, actually, and my mom from Charlevoix, and I've spent a lot of time up there.
I'm sitting right down by the breakwater, you know, looking at the ice by the lake.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
I spent a lot of my childhood there. Anyhow, for Bernie.
Beautiful area. Anyway, Senator Jeremy Scahill has a new book out about Blackwater, and I'd like to get your opinion about whether you believe our government's becoming too dependent on both mercenaries and government contractors.
The answer is to both the questions is yes, I do. What we're finding is that contractors, in too many instances, are ripping off the taxpayers of this country. I think they cause morale problems for the men and women in the armed forces who find that people who are doing jobs that soldiers used to do are now receiving substantially more money. I think there's less accountability involved. We mentioned a moment ago that one of the problems relating to the disaster at Walter Reed has to do with the fact that services there were privatized. So to answer Matt's questions, yes, I share those concerns.
Jim in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, listening to WPTT. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Thanks, Senator, as everyone is aware now that Halliburton plans to move out of the country into an Arab area, is there any plan by the Senate or Congress to take back all the classified information that these people have contracts for and the inventories listed of all the mechanisms that we have over there, all our equipment that they're in charge of? To me, this is a disgrace that they would even be allowed out of the country. In my opinion, to go into a country where there is given immunity from extradition and take our records with them is a total disgrace.
I would agree with you. It is a total disgrace. And what the tax implications are remains to be seen as well. That you have a company of which the Vice President of the United States used to head, a company which has been given enormous responsibility in so many areas, has ripped off taxpayers, has been investigated, that this company would then set up its headquarters. I guess it's in Dubai. Is that right, Tom?
That's right. Yeah, in Dubai.
The caller is absolutely right. It is an outrage, and it is something that Congress must look at.
Yeah, Dubai used to be the gold smuggling center of the Middle East. They have a long history.
It's a good hope for them. We don't.
Yeah, they have a long history of wink, wink, nod, nod, no regulations, anything goes. Amazing. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie segment, 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls for Bernie Sanders right after this break here on the Tom Hartman Show.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
It's a brand new day. Democrats have only been in charge for a few weeks or maybe a month or so. And look at all this stuff that is coming out from underneath the various rocks that are being turned over. Imagine how much more is coming. 34 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line taking your calls. 1-866-303-2270. Our telephone number, TomHartman.com, if you'd like to drop into our live chat room. And Len in New York City, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. One of the snakes who are running around in Washington is Grover Norquist. And there was some evidence, some considerable evidence, that he had what seemed like laundered money for Jack Abramoff. Which committee, who's looking into this to see if we can cut off the head of that snake?
Well, my God, almost every committee is doing one kind of investigation or another. Judiciary Committee is doing investigations. The Armed Forces Committee is doing investigations. Foreign Relations Committee is doing investigations. Generally speaking, those types of things, I think, would take place within the Judiciary Committees.
Bennett in Los Angeles, California. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders. Bennett?
Oh, no, Bennett. Hi.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bennett. I dropped you just as you said hi. I'm sorry. Dave driving in California. You can call back. You're live with Bernie Sanders, Dave.
Hello.
Hi there. Hey, you're live and on the air.
Yes. I was wondering about the people in that did such a good job in Iraq from the Heritage Foundation, the interns. Have they qualified for retirement programs with the government and these lawyers that are now replacing? How long do they have to work at their job before they qualify for a lifetime government retirement?
Well, I suspect that if they work for 2 years or 4 years, they do not get lifetime government retirement. You have to work for a certain number of years, I think 10 years or 20 years, before you get various types of...
It's civil service.
Yeah,
I think people have very, and they've been promoted by the right wing, some very bizarre notions of the benefits you guys get. I periodically get these emails from these right wingers going, you know, Senator Byrd is going to retire with $1 million a year and, you know, lifetime dental or something like that. And it's like, you know, hey, wait a minute. You know,
so, no, I mean, the pension program is based on how much you make and how long you serve. And as I understand,
just like the one at GM.
Yeah, it's similar for all government employees. Obviously, members of Congress make more money, and some of them serve a long time, and they're going to get better pensions. But it's the same formula.
Yeah. Jack in San Diego, California, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yes. When testifying before Congress, not all witnesses are placed under oath. However, all witnesses are covered under U.S. Code 18, Section 1001, that it is a felony to make false statements to Congress during testimony. Now, having said that, if Alberto Gonzalez has lied to Congress during his recent testimony, and by these latest emails it appears that he has, who decides whether he's going to be prosecuted under this law? And if it's the Justice Department, how would this law apply to Alberto Gonzalez?
You mean how will the Justice Department under Alberto Gonzalez investigate Alberto Gonzalez is what you're asking.
And how does he get prosecuted for violating this law if he did indeed lie to Congress during his testimony?
Well, there are legal mechanisms to do that, but I think the first question is to understand the truth about what his role has been in this whole thing. And I think you're going to see the Senate Judiciary Committee asking questions that have not been asked for a very long time. And I think you're going to see that committee bringing a number of witnesses. You're going to see them subpoenaing some of the U.S. attorneys who have been forced to resign and try to get to the truth of this and see what Gonzalez's role has been, what Roe's role has been, what the president's role may have been. And that will be a very interesting process.
Mark in Asbury Park, New Jersey. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey, guys. How are you this morning?
Good.
Great.
Thanks for taking my call. Senator Sanders, I'm concerned about where my tax dollars go. Recently, I had been laid off and was forced to pay a crippling payment to insure my family for a couple months, one that just basically almost didn't allow me to pay my mortgage. I'm curious, with the quantity and the exorbitant amount of money we spend on defense, is there anyone in the world that we're competing with currently? And is there any way we can knock some sense into Americans to convince them that we don't need to figure out how to kill people quicker and maybe should invest more in our education and hopefully a universal health care for Americans? And I'll hang up and let you answer.
Well, Mark, thanks very much for that question. And some of us are working hard on just in the areas that you've articulated. In my view, and we've introduced legislation called the New National Priorities Act, it addresses just what you're talking about. And that is, in terms of defense spending, the president has requested a very significant increase. My concern is that there is a huge amount of waste and fraud within the Pentagon that people are not looking at, that we are funding weapon systems that were based on fighting the Soviet Union and the old Cold War, rather than dealing with the problems that we now have with international terrorism. And also, I think we have a tax system which provides huge tax breaks to the very wealthiest people in this country who don't need them. Meanwhile, we are underfunding all kinds of areas that deserve more funds. You talk about the need for a national health care program to guarantee health care to all people. That is certainly something that we should be doing. In fact, if we do that,
through a rational system, we will not be spending more money on health care than we're currently spending. Certainly, we should be making college affordable to every family in America who has people who want to get a college education and can take advantage of college. We should be doing that. Child care is a huge issue. Affordable housing is another issue. Dealing with the pending huge problems associated with global warming, if we don't get our act together, moving toward energy efficiency and sustainable energy, this planet is going to be in severe problems. And if we do the right thing, we can create a whole lot of jobs. So what some of us are fighting for, Mark, is in fact to fundamentally change the priorities of this nation. I think in almost every area, Bush is moving us in the wrong direction, in an anti-environmental way, an anti-work way, a way that antagonizes the entire international community. And the most important thing I think that we can be doing as a nation is to bring our people together around an agenda that speaks for the needs of the middle class and working families rather than the wealthy, that speaks toward internationalism, bringing people together for common purposes to protect the environment, to oppose international terrorism effectively, and so forth and so on. So you've asked the right question, and we just need a huge grassroots movement working with people in Congress to move us in that direction.
Sheila in Eugene, Oregon, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, hi there. I have two comments. One is the money that the president keeps asking for that we need supposedly in Iraq. If they would just stop building the permanent bases, which must take billions of dollars each, 17 of them, we'd have plenty of money. The other thing I was calling about, and it's not certainly not as important as some of the other things that callers are, but we keep hearing unemployment figures that, oh, they're down and the unemployment figures are lower than they were whenever. But the point is that they're not reporting honestly. They don't include the people who have dropped off the rolls for unemployment. So we get totally skewed figures. If they would include those people who are no longer eligible for unemployment insurance, the figures of unemployed would skyrocket.
Sheila, you're absolutely right, and this is not a new issue. It's one that has been out there for many years. As you know, Sheila, if somebody has given up, is in a high unemployment area, and has given up looking for work, they're not counted as part of the unemployed. If people are working part-time who need full-time jobs, they're not counted as employed. So that distorts those statistics. Furthermore, what these statistics also don't address is the degree to which people are underemployed, the degree to which you have people who have college educations who wanted to do certain types of professions can't find those jobs because those jobs may have gone to India or to China and are working at jobs that pay them substantially lower wages than they had a right to expect. But I think your point is a very good point in that the statistics that we often hear really distort the economic reality facing the middle class.
Bennett in Los Angeles, California. We have about a half a minute before we've got to take a break. Quick question?
Yeah, I'd just like to urge the senator and the Democratic caucus to do a comprehensive study of the impact of the Bush administration on the lives of the American people in terms of the health effects of their regulations, you know, how much more Americans are paying for this and that. You know, I'm a columnist, and it's hard to find this information. And I think it'd be really powerful if it was all in one place. Thanks a lot.
That's a good idea, Bennett. That is a very good idea.
Something to hand off to the Congressional Research Service, perhaps, Bernie?
Well, one has to specify exactly what one needs, but yes.
I see. Yeah. It is probably one of the think tanks, maybe one of Ralph Nader's think tanks has done something like that. We'll have to look around. 45 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line taking your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
conviction when I feel that I've been wrong. It makes me strong.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, speaking from behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone in the People's Republic of Little Beirut, also known as Portland. That's what Bush Sr. called it when he came here and got heckled. Anyhow, welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with you. And Kathy in Long Branch, New Jersey, you are live with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator. Hi, Tom. Hey, why did the Democrats in Washington remove that one aspect in the supplemental to do with Iran? I mean, has my party gone crazy? Are we just giving them another blank check?
I agree with you. In fact, I have introduced legislation in the Senate which would mandate that before the president attack Iran, he get authorization and come to the United States Congress, which I think is the constitutionally proper thing to do. I think if he came to Congress, he would not get authority. But the idea of this president on his own attacking Iran and making a horrendous situation even worse is awful. So I would agree with your position.
Dave in Detroit, Michigan, listening on WDTW. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hello, Senator. I first want to commend you. What a great segment. What a great program, Tom. But for you to have the courage to talk to people like this is just a great thing. Anyway, my question is will they finish this phase two or the intelligence investigation phase two? It seems like it'll hold a lot of answers to this twisted intelligence question. And if I can slip in another question as far as the will there be any attention to this fairness in media, maybe revising it or bringing some form of it back?
I'm sorry, the second part of the question, Tom, was?
Programming in the public interest, you know, the fairness.
Yeah, okay. Dave asked two very good questions. Number one, there is an investigation going on now that I think the American people need to follow, and that is the question of how we got into the war and why we got into the war and the degree to which the administration cherry-picked the intelligence. Now, the CIA and the DIA and the other intelligence agencies have been faulted for providing false intelligence, but there is, a strong argument to say that they, in fact, provided, on occasion, good intelligence that the president chose not to look at in his desire to go to war, and we have to know more about that. In terms of media, Dave asks the question that you and I have chatted about, and that is, what is the public interest, what is the public responsibility of stations, radio and television stations, that use public airwaves to the American people? Do they have any other obligations than just making as much money as they possibly can? And I believe that if you look at the 1934 Communications Act, the language is pretty clear, that those people who have been given the right to use the airwaves, who have been given limited spectrum, do have a responsibility. And, in fact, we are working on legislation right now that raises that question in many ways. We're working specifically at this moment on the issue of children's programming. The television stations are mandated to provide 3 hours a week of educational and informative programming for kids. There is a very strong argument to be made that they are not doing that. But Dave raises a very, very important issue.
Mark in Berkeley, California, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Senator, it just came to light to me that there's a vote going in front of the Iraqi parliament concerning the oil profit sharing by which the American oil corporations are going to be getting, one figure I saw was a 75% cut of it. This seems to me to be the main reason, perhaps, of this whole debacle over there. And is Congress doing anything to stop this? And at the same time, if the oil companies do get all the money, will the American people get any of their tax dollars back, especially if these companies are based, say, in Dubai now? Thank you.
You've asked an interesting question, Mark. As I think many of the listeners know, the oil companies in recent years have been running up huge profits. I think ExxonMobil last year made more profits than any corporation in world history. And yet they managed to come back to the taxpayers of this country and the Congress for corporate welfare as a result. Mark has raised a whole bunch of questions, but the idea of giving corporate welfare to incredibly profit oil companies makes no sense at all to me. And we're going to try to do away with corporate welfare and ask those corporations who are making large profits to start paying their fair share of taxes.
Steve in Mountain View, California. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Senator Sanders.
Good morning.
This is Silicon Valley that we have since 2000. We've had an increasing trend to take all the workers over 40 years old and throw them out. Well, if you do the math, if you're 40 and you get thrown out, even though you're highly skilled, you still have 25 years before you're going to retire. So is there anything pending in Congress that's going to try to address this issue of putting our most skillful people out in the street?
And the reason for that is, like, it's, you can bring in new workers at lower wages, and you don't have to worry about pensions as well. Is that right?
Yeah, if you listen to the corporate heads here in Silicon Valley, they keep clamoring for an increase of I-2 visas.
Yeah, that is it. Yeah,
the answer is, labor.
The answer is that this issue of visas for highly skilled workers is an issue that some of us are taking a very hard look at. In the last Senate immigration bill, for example, there was a provision that would have allowed for tens of thousands of nurses to come into this country from the Philippines and elsewhere at exactly the same time as large numbers of Americans are being rejected from nursing schools because we don't have the capability in the nursing schools of educating them. That's true for engineers as well. So that is an issue that we are going to take a very hard look at.
Good. Senator Bernie Sanders, once again, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Always great to have you here with us every Friday.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye. You too. Yeah, have a good weekend. 57 minutes past the hour. Coming up next, Arthur D. Ally. What about Ford?
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio. Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the No Boring Zone.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 6 minutes past the hour. Ford Motor Company has advertised in publications. Well, actually, let me let Arthur Ally tell you the whole story. Arthur Ally is with us. He is the founder and president of Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is spelled like the name, timothyplan.com, which is an investment. Arthur, how would you describe this?
Well, we are a mutual fund family, Tom, a pro-life, pro-family mutual fund family, so we're definitely niche. You know, for people concerned about these issues,
right? So it's sort of like the common cause ones. You know, where if you want to save the planet, you'll invest in companies that are green. With yours, you invest with companies that are against abortion and against homosexuality
and pornography. We won't own companies that are actively funding or involved in that. Right.
Right. Right. Okay. So what's your problem with Ford Motor Company?
Well, I don't have any problem with them. We just won't own them.
Right. Well, I have a press release here that has a headline that says Ford puts homosexuality over shareholder profits. And I find it hard to believe that a corporation would put anything over shareholder profits, because both, you know, Supreme Court precedent and law require corporations to put corporate profits first.
Well, it's incredible, and I don't understand it either, Tom. But the bent on Ford Motor Company appears to be really focused on funding the homosexual agenda.
Could it be that, you know, Ford has figured out that there's a significant percentage, some, you know, I guess the number that's most commonly used is around 10% of the population is gay, and that those people have a lot of purchasing power, and they might want them to buy Ford automobiles?
Well, and all that's true, except, you know, there's like almost a million people now that have signed a boycott, is from what I understand, of Ford products. And, you know, to sit there and all we're talking about now is from a business perspective, you know, morals aside, to offend a big part of the population, which it sounds like they've done, and the homosexual group, I know people try to say 10%, but I still think it's like about 1%, but it's fringe size-wise compared to the basic pro-life, pro-family people that make up a big part of their customer base. And when they've got that many people that will actually, you know, it takes a lot of frustration to get people of traditional values to do anything, and for them to sign a petition that they're not going to buy any Ford products at a time when Ford is losing billions and billions of dollars, to me was just incredible. I couldn't.
I would submit to you, Arthur Ally, that those of TimothyPlan.com, that those were the same arguments that were made in the 1950s about, you know, how, you know, that Woolworth made about, well, if we allow these black people to sit in our restaurants, then there's going to be a whole lot of people who are going to be very upset and they will boycott us. This seems to me, on your part, to be simply not just the justification of bigotry, but the promotion of bigotry.
Well, Tom, no, you're not understanding. I don't think. Maybe I didn't say it very well. I'm not calling for a boycott of Ford products. I mean,
you won't invest in their company, so you're boycotting their stock.
We won't own their stock.
Right.
We live in a country where, as far as I know, you still have choices, and, you know, people would have choices to buy or not buy, to own or not own. And we are not... it's rare for us to do a press release. I just thought it was incredible that with the humongous losses they have financially, that they would take that kind of a stand when there's such a backlash coming at them. I just thought it was, you know, a bad
business. Well, doesn't every company ultimately just ultimately have to boil it down to, I mean, there are some companies who try to do the thing that they think is right, whether it's profitable or not, I suppose. But my guess is with Ford and you know, maybe with Disney as well. I don't know this. It's been a long time since I kept track of the status of Disney offering, you know, their gay, you know, gay employees, partners, benefits and things. I'm assuming that they're still doing that. Ford is, sorry, I lost my thought there. I just got distracted by something in the studio. Ford doing this would simply be a good business policy. That they're advertising to a market that they believe has money to buy their products.
Well, I mean, you're probably right on what their thought process is.
You're going to punish them for making profits.
The only point I would make is that they're alienating a much larger group to cater to a much smaller group numerically, and that's what I had a problem with. But
I would submit to you,
Ford,
Arthur,
you know,
Arthur, that increasingly that larger group who view gays in a very
Ford,
bigoted way is actually shrinking.
Only that Ford officials will know the answer to that one. I just thought it was a little incredible with the big boycott that's going on. I'm not the guy calling for the boycott. We rarely will go out there and condemn anybody. We just choose not to own companies that are involved in or supporting abortion, pornography, or promotion of the homosexual agenda. There is a mirror image of us, a reverse image of us out there that will only own companies promoting the homosexual agenda. And I couldn't disagree personally more with them, but I would defend their right to be there. They have a right to do that.
What is the homosexual agenda, please?
Well, where do you draw the line, maybe, is what you're asking me. And we really struggled over this issue of, say, same-sex health benefits. Well, where we come down on that is that does not cause us to screen out a company. If you own a company and you have 1,000
employees...
Could
that be because so many companies are doing it now that it's virtually normal in corporate America?
No, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the thinking at the corporate level. If you have employees and you offer health benefits to your employees, you would naturally include health benefits to, if you have homosexual employees, to them. That does not cause us to screen out a company. What causes us to screen out, and when I say screen out, it means we tell our managers, you can't buy this company, is where they're promoting an agenda, where they're sponsoring events.
Right, but you're also where they're buying ads and publications that have to do with, you know, like gay publications and things like that. I understand that.
Yeah.
Your news release, Arthur Ally, president of Timothy Plan, timothyplan.com, America's pro-life, pro-family mutual fund group, says the fact that the leadership of Ford has turned its back on the majority of people who purchase their vehicles in order to promote a fringe agenda is unbelievable. The next paragraph says the pro-family organization AFA, AFA.net, indicates a total of approximately 671,000 members have signed their BoycottFord.com pledge. The AFA has been urging Ford to simply forego any further advertising. So, I mean, you say that you're not advocating a boycott, yet your news release is pointing to it.
Well, that's where the factual information came from, and that's where I came up with the conclusion, what is wrong with these people? And AFA, I think, is just one. I mean, there's so much in the media about Ford that if about 20 pro-life, pro-family companies that are condemning Ford's aggressive sponsorship of that agenda.
I get it. You suggest that, and I think our listeners do too, you suggest that the Timothy Plan is a, quote, biblically based group, right? Pro-life, pro-family.
That is exactly correct.
You know, one of the very first commands in Genesis is to, you know, be good stewards of the earth, of the planet. It's why not invest in companies if you really want to go to the core of this that are, or Christian, if you know, the Matthew 25 or the Sermon on the Mount, you know, of compassion for our fellow man and woman, why not invest in companies that are working to help save the world rather than disinvest in companies because they aren't following a bigoted agenda?
They aren't following a bigoted agenda.
Yes, I consider discrimination against gays to be bigotry. But there are companies that are saying, hey, we're gonna try and become more green, for example. We're gonna try and reduce our emissions of greenhouse gases. If you're biblically based, why not invest, why not be advocating for companies that are doing the right thing?
Well, most companies are today now operating on a very environmentally responsible basis. If one would be irresponsible, we wouldn't even own that company. That's not one of our major screens. But our screens are what they are. And for people concerned about abortion, pornography, and the other issue,
and
we're here for them.
Yeah. TimothyPlan.com. Thank you, Arthur. 16 minutes.
In broadcasting, this is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Come and listen in to a radio station with a mighty host, a living sing. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
If you want to feel those good vibrations coming from the joy that this love can bring, turn your radio on.
Radio on.
Turn your radio on.
And welcome back, Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. We're going to get to your calls in just a few minutes here, but about many of you have opinions on this issue, and as you probably know, I share some of those opinions. But there is also news out there that I can't let slide by. I want to share with you very quickly. First of all, Yesterday, we talked at some length about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and his confession.
Did you capture the Lindbergh baby? Yes, I did!
You know, that sort of thing. And turns out that Larissa Alexandrova over at blogging over on Huffington Post, actually, I'm assuming perhaps this started over at Raw Story, where she is usually blogging, but Where is Waldo? Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Larissa talking about how this guy's basically confessed to everything except the assassination of, the assassination of the Pope. Actually, he confessed to that as well. Pope John Paul II, the attempt. Everything except the assassination of McKinley. And she points out that with regard to, for example, the confession that he killed Danny Pearl, the Wall Street Journal reporter, the BBC reported British-born Ahmed Omar Saeed Sheikh has been sentenced to death for abducting and murdering U.S. journalist Daniel Pearl. Omar Sheikh, 27, was born in London, attended the London School of Economics, and was a close associate of Maulana Azhar Masood, founder of the banned Jaish-e-Mohammed, JEM group, which India blames for an attack on its parliament in December 2001. And there's even a video of it, of Omar Saeed Sheikh cutting off Daniel Pearl's head, if you can imagine such a thing in the age of media and technology, as Larissa points out. So, and Pearl was investigating how September 11 was funded, tracing the money from an order given by Pakistani General Mahmoud Ahmad to his asset Omar Sheikh, who in turn wired 100,000 of it via Dubai, soon to be the home of Halliburton, to Mohammed Atta, the lead 9/11 hijacker. Ahmed was, at the time, the head of ISI, Pakistan's intelligence. Pearl was tracking the bag boy, Omar Sheikh, when he was murdered by Omar Sheikh. And yet yesterday we had the Pentagon saying, oh, yeah, no, we asked Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who an entirely different person, you know, did you kill Daniel Pearl? Yes, I did. And he confessed to it. Another interesting confession that was announced in yesterday's New York Times. Were you planning on attacking the Plaza Bank building in Washington State? Yes, we were working on that one. Well, here's the problem with that. The Plaza Bank was not founded until 2006, and they started torturing this guy in 2003. So he's now confessing to... Now, the building had been there before that, but it wasn't called the Plaza Bank building. And so here he is confessing to something long after the confession coming it couldn't have been long before. Basically, the bottom line, he's confessing to everything but the kitchen sink. And, you know, I'm not buying it all. Yeah, I'm sure he's a major bad guy, and he may well be the absolute mastermind. In fact, much of the evidence points to the absolute mastermind behind 9/11. Although Osama bin Laden is still at large, what role he played. I mean, it may be, and probably a bad guy. But the tragedy of this is that because we have employed torture, and in fact, one of the, you know, the New York Times yesterday was talking in the article about how no CIA agent could withstand waterboarding for more than 14 seconds before they would tell anything that people wanted them to say, basically. And they all admired Khalid Sheikh Mohammed because he lasted 2.5 minutes. Two and a half minutes, I'll tell you anything. And then we get this kind of information, and we're supposed to base policy on this, and we may be executing a guy based on this. And then, you know, Rosie O'Donnell raises, you know, some, I think, fairly legitimate issues about what happened to due process in the United States. This guy, it's not going to be possible for him to have a fair trial in a court of law. You can't use this kind of evidence. We have tainted the evidence that could have been used to successfully prosecute this man and thus obtain closure for the 9/11 families by the use of these by world standards and, frankly, by American standards, illegal techniques. And a variety of them, by the way. 3 years of the denial of due process, the use of torture, and on, you know, on and on it goes. A secret CIA prisons, kidnapping two of his sons, a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old. They kidnapped his kids from Pakistan. And we don't know how they were used in his interrogation, but, you know, one can imagine. And from this, we're going to obtain a prosecution that the world is going to salute. I'm sorry, at the Nuremberg trials, we gave people due process. We gave them real trials, we revealed their real crimes, and then we hanged them. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
Toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. Our telephone number, 1-866-303-2270. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live free chat room. And AirAmerica.com if you want to drop into the blog. There's also a message board over at TomHartman.com. Click message board. It'll get you there. Philip in San Diego, California, listening on KLSD. Hey, Philip, what's on your mind today?
Well, a couple of things. Real quickly on this last story that you did, another twist on that is in the Asia Times Online from 2003, there's an extensive report about how this guy that supposedly has confessed to everything now was killed in a bombing campaign, and his wife was interrogated by the FBI and the Pakistani intelligence.
Well, have you seen the picture of him?
Yeah, it kind of looks like John Belushi, huh?
I was just going to say, I think that he's John Belushi. John Belushi didn't die. John Belushi went to Pakistan undercover, and somehow the CIA busted him and waterboarded him, and he's forgotten that he's John Belushi.
Unbelievable. I just don't believe
it's
that.
It's as good as my pigeon theory.
I couldn't believe the other guy either. I was hoping he was going to take calls because I'd like to find out once and for all just what this homosexual agenda is. I'm gay. I've been gay since I was about 11 or 12 years old, and I'm in my 40s now, and I don't know what the agenda is. I think our only agenda, really, is for people like that, and you hit the nail on the head with it being bigotry. Bigots that use the Bible to justify their bigotry to just stay out of our business. My partner and I are just simple people that work, pay taxes, add to the economy by spending money in the economy.
Well, that must be the homosexual agenda, Philip.
I guess it is. I guess if I had one agenda.
Same as the heterosexual agenda. Gee, let's just be people.
Well, twisting around the words of Christ and everything else seems to be their agenda. But
homosexuality is mentioned in the Bible about as often as the dangers of eating shellfish. I mean, you know,
they don't even mention lesbianism, and they go back to the Sodom story. But a lot of people don't understand that the Sodom story was about the sin about not being hospitable to your neighbors.
Exactly.
In Christ's scripture, it talks about how Christ sends his apostles out to go talk to people, and he says if they're not kind to you and they don't let you in the door, wipe the dust off your feet, and their sin will be greater than that of Sodom. It was the sin of hospitality. But really,
that's
Tom,
right.
My only agenda as a homosexual, at least here in California, is I lobby a lot for stricter rules on bullying in school for gay teenagers, kids that come out that are gay at that point, not to be bullied or intimidated, or
that's
to
very,
do the worst
good.
Thing. 2 out of 3 teenage suicides, according to a study coming out of the government, I think in 2000, said that 2 out of 3 kids that commit suicide and complete suicide are either identified as gay, lesbian, or bisexual identified teens.
Right.
So
yeah.
That's my only agenda. Beyond that, it's just leave me alone. You know, I don't go over to my neighbor's house that's heterosexual and say, you know, the Bible says you shouldn't be doing this, you know.
Yeah. Well, good on you, Philip, for lobbying to help help protect our kids from the dangers of the bigots around us and for living a good life. I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Great to hear from you. Gary in Cordian, Indiana. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I was... The guy said there was 1 million people signed the petition, and even if you took his figure of 1%, all right, there's 301 million people here. That means there's over 3 million people that are gay. So, you know, there's
so the gays outnumber the petitioners 3-1 in a worst case scenario.
Yeah, and I don't even buy the 10% thing. I mean, I think it's more than that. But I mean, you know, assuming that that's real. Yeah, I mean, you know, you're talking 30 million people. And on top of that, actually this is something a little bit different, but, you know, since the religious institutions have become such a big part of our political scene, and you have churches that are putting out these voting guides and all that kind of stuff, why don't we just do away with the nonprofit status of all of these churches? And if they want to get involved, fine, and let them pay taxes like everybody else.
Yeah, I am almost there. The reason why churches have nonprofit status is the same reason why orphanages and schools have nonprofit status, and that is that when those decisions were made mostly throughout the early half of the 20th century, the idea was that there are some institutions, and some of them were made as late as the 1960s. The idea was that there are some institutions that are sufficiently valuable to society that we want to actually, as a culture, subsidize them. That education is valuable. That caring for orphans is valuable, or abused kids. That the basic category of things that fall into 501c3, and that category of tax exempt organizations, and that spirituality is valuable and it's important. There is a positive value associated with it. I believe that to be the case, but these guys have taken that tax exempt status and used. Many of these guys have taken. Many people are very honorably using tax exempt status in churches and doing well, and God bless them. But there are some of these mega churches that have become institutions that are, you know, bigger than some, you know, multinational corporations. And, you know, Pat Robertson is a billionaire now with a B, and based on tax exempt activity. You just have to wonder, you know, is this right? And I, at a certain level, I say, no, I don't think it is. And I agree with you, Gary, that it's time for us to at the very least revisit it or go back to those rules that were put into place during LBJ's administration, that any church that engages in any kind of political activity at all loses their tax exempt status. But then you have the problem: how do you define political activity? I mean, they're going after that church in, I believe it was Pasadena, that simply preached a sermon on peace without mentioning political candidates before the 2004 election, and the IRS is going after them. And Falwell's on TV all the time going, oh, yes, Republicans, wonderful, Democrats, horrible, and nobody's going after him. I don't get it. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Angus in Edmonton, Canada. Hey, Angus, welcome to the program.
Hi. My problem isn't so much with the guy and his project itself. You know, if you want to be bigoted, then so be it. It's his choice of language,
mm-hmm.
that they're pro-family.
Right, there's a lot of gays that
somehow homosexuality and family are exclusive.
Right.
And, of course, family is something that we're all for. Therefore, we all have to be against homosexuality. There are a lot of homosexuals that have families.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, even if you were to make it personal, like suppose he had this anti-Scottish agenda. This is personal from my point of view. Add me Scottish agenda. We won't invest in any company that has a Scottish CEO. I say, yeah, well, okay, go off, have fun. But if they said, we do this because we don't want raw sewage in the streets.
And the Scottish people are in favor of that, right?
Well,
you know, if you try to conflate a group of people with something that everybody agrees is either positive or negative, then you're entering into the realm of bigotry as opposed to
we're pro puppies and kittens, therefore we don't like the Scots.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas,
yeah.
You know, the sewage in the streets is obviously cliche Muhammad's fault.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Good point, Angus. Thanks a lot.
While I'm not personally homosexual, I've kind of decided to
take solidarity with them. And if anybody could actually let me in on what this agenda is, you know, I could, yes. I could help. I do like your first caller. What was his name?
I don't recall, but they're the fellow who said
Philip,
that,
Philip, yeah,
pays,
I do like
taxes.
Philip's idea, and I think I shall look into that. But
yeah.
If there are any other points, you know, somebody feel free to mail me, you know.
Okay, and Angus will support the homosocial agenda. Good on you, Angus. Thank you very much for calling. Erwin in Flushing, New York. Hey, Erwin.
How are you, Tom? You know,
I am great. What's up?
It's one thing to take on the homosexual thing. They might have to have a chance of winning, but hell, taking on the pornography people and the abortion, the millions of Americans that have cable porn, all sorts of porn, born-again Christians to liberal lefties like myself. Millions of people, millions of Americans love their pornography.
Well, you know who the biggest distributors of pornography in the United States are, Erwin?
Yeah.
They are the cable companies, the big cable companies, the big telephone companies, without naming them, and the major hotel chains. Those three categories of companies account for more than 90% of the distribution of pornography in the United States.
They have about as much chance of winning as I do of swimming the Atlantic Ocean. And the people, the pro-choice people of abortion, by every poll that I've ever seen, more than 50% of Americans support the right of a woman to have an abortion. I say, good luck.
Yeah.
Go after
yeah.
The heck with the gays. They're like, it's like a big guy, a big bully, trying to beat up a 3-year-old kid. Take the guy who's 28 years old, you know, with his abs, taking on pornographers and taking on abortion people is like taking on the Samari wrestlers. I don't think they'll do it. They're hypocrites.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Good point, Erwin. Oops, sorry about that. Hey, Rick in Lovington, Oregon. Got to take a break here. Just a few seconds, Rick. You had a quick point you wanted to make?
Yeah, I was just want to comment on how this news at Guantanamo about the confessions is, you know, how do you think it's over trying to overshadow what's happening with Gonzalez?
Absolutely. Yeah. They've been sitting on this for 3.5 years, and all of a sudden they decided to drop this into the press. Certainly, they thought they could push Gonzalez off the front pages the same way Gonzalez has pushed the Walter Reed scandal off the front pages. Apparently, the Gonzalez scandal is a little stronger than the fact that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed confessed to, did you kill McKinley? Yes, I did. Yeah, absolutely. No doubt in my mind. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
Just another poor boy out to fight a rich man's war. I'm an eagle and a flag tattooed on his arm. Red, white, and blue to the bone will land in Kandahar. I left behind a pretty young wife and a baby girl. A stack of overdue bills and went off to save the world. It's been a year now, he's still in, chasing ghosts and thin dry air. We were back at home, the fine has come and took his car. He's just another poor boy off to fight a rich man's war.
And welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Program, 9 minutes before the hour. Victoria Jones on the line with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. Victoria, I saw you on Keith Olbermann last night. I'm watching Keith Olbermann's show, Countdown, and there's Victoria Jones harassing poor Tony Snow on television.
Was that me responding to his question when he says back to me, depends what you mean by political, and that when I said having to do with politics?
That, exactly, and you looked great, by the way.
Oh, good. Well, that's all that matters. Well, normally I would be reporting to you on today's press briefing, but I have to say I'm not doing because it hasn't taken place, because we've had a fence jumper and a suspicious package, and so they've closed everything down, and I'm stuck in a Caribou Coffee across the street waiting to be allowed in, and apparently they're having trouble. Oh, no, and they're doing construction in the Caribou Coffee. I'm going to go outside into the torrential rain where I'm going poured on. I'm standing outside in the torrential rain now. They're having trouble blowing up the suspicious package. The robot apparently isn't up to the job.
Now, is this perhaps all because Valerie Plame was testifying in before Congress today and talking about, yes, I was undercover, and yes, there were entire networks overseas that were disrupted, and I don't know if she, I haven't read her entire testimony yet, but from what I'm seeing on the blogs, it sounds like she basically laid it out that these guys committed treason.
Well, she laid it out, but not only did she lay it out, when Henry Waxman introduced her, and I was at her testimony this morning, at least the first part of it, he read a statement from the CIA which set out her status, and they said quite clearly that she was covert and that she did do these things and that she did travel and that she did work on weapons of mass destruction. And it was the CIA itself in its statement this morning that clearer even than Valerie Plame herself could do that laid out the nature of her work, the importance of her work, and the danger of her work.
So we've got George W. Bush, who
I'm not making this up.
Yeah, I know you're not. So we've got George W. Bush, who is saying...
And I don't know if we're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Well, now we have an idea. We know at least five or six people who leaked Valerie Plame's name, including Karl Rove and Dick Cheney. Now that Bush knows, he had promised to fire anybody who worked in his administration who did this. And according to what the CIA said this morning in the testimony, it sounds like it did some considerable damage to our intelligence service. That's a whole lot worse than lying about having a little nookie in the White House, isn't it?
You would say that it probably is worse than lying about having fellatio.
Yeah.
Yes, you would say that.
Yeah, then I certainly just said it. And so is anything going to be done? I mean, is anybody going to be prosecuted for this?
I don't know that it's going to go in that direction, quite honestly. I think there will be pressure on President Bush as this unfolds to, you know, say who are you going to fire, who are you going to fire President Bush. The difficulty is that because he only has one press conference a month and so few people get to ask him a question, and those two people have a lot of pressure from their networks to ask particular questions, the likelihood of a question about this being asked is fairly slim. So what pressure will there be on the president to do something about this? Not very
much.
Maybe
a subpoena from Congress?
That's a possibility, and that wouldn't necessarily surprise me. This committee is very serious about this investigation.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big deal, apparently, if what Henry Waxman said, the CIA said this morning, is true, and if what Valerie Plame said is true, and she was testifying under oath, and the CIA was simply making a simple, you know, straightforward statement, this is a major intelligence operation that had to do with weapons of mass destruction, counterterrorism, and the Bush administration brought it down intentionally. Why did they? And here's another question in my mind: why did they bring it down? I mean, there's a part of me that doesn't believe that they brought down Valerie Plame's operation simply to hurt Joe Wilson. There's a part of me that is convinced that one of the reasons that they brought down Valerie Plame's operation is because the CIA, many people within the CIA, and perhaps even the CIA as an institution, were pushing back against the Office of Special Plans in the Pentagon and saying, hey, wait a minute, our intelligence says there were no weapons of mass destruction. We've been telling you that all along. We don't want to be the scapegoat anymore. We're not going to be the fall guys. And that's one of the reasons why Bush put Porter Goss in there, and immediately all these CIA officers quit, and all these senior CIA people were fired because they did this purge of anybody who might actually have a commitment to intelligence rather than politics.
On the other hand, what you've got coming from the Republicans, and this came out a little bit in the questioning today, is that the outing was perhaps inadvertent, that they didn't in fact know that she was covert.
Let's get Karl Rove under oath and find out.
Then good luck doing
that. What a novel idea, huh? Yeah.
Well,
okay.
I think you've got to take a number depending which committee you're on.
Yeah. Okay. Real quickly, anything else in Washington D.C. we need to know about?
The clouds are gathering around Alberto Gonzalez. The money's on really, you know, when not if.
Hmm. Interesting. Are they taking odds in Vegas yet?
I'm sure they're taking odds in Vegas.
Yeah, interesting. How, you know, will he last out the week? Will he last out the month?
I think he'll last out the week.
Yeah. The big question is, who in the Justice Department would prosecute the head of the Justice Department?
That's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I don't either. Hopefully we'll find out. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Great talking with you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. It's 57 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, the True People's Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio. Proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Dr. Helen Caldicott is on the line. She is just an incredible CV, but most importantly, I'd say the co-founder of Physicians for Social Responsibility and president of the Nuclear Policy Research Institute and a Nobel Prize Peace Prize nominee. And Dr. Caldicott, we've spoken two or three times over the 4 years that I've been doing this program, usually on nuclear power and nuclear weapons. But you have a new book out, War in Heaven, The Arms Race in Outer Space, that is extraordinary. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
And thank you so much for coming back with us. The weaponization of outer space. I suspect most Americans, when they think of our space programs and even the space shuttle and NASA and everything, just think this is all benign. It has to do with the Hubble telescope. We've got satellites up there so that, for example, you and I can talk from long distances and things like this. It just ain't so.
Well, there are two tracks in space. One is the peaceful uses of outer space, which earns America at the moment $100 billion a year from communications and ATMs and cell phones and global communications and the like and the like. The other track is the military. And ever since Sputnik went up in 1957, the military's been interested in using space for war and killing, which they're always interested in. And so there have been two parallel tracks. Space is already militarized in that there are satellites up there which make weapons extremely accurate. And since 1991, these have been used to target facilities both in Afghanistan and in Iraq and elsewhere, and they're being used extensively now. And that's really scary. It operates actually through Pine Gap, which is the biggest CIA base in the world in Australia, in the middle of Australia. But now they're talking about more than militarization of space, and that's weaponizing space, actually putting weapons in space to be launched from space down to Earth and affect very many kills. It's called full spectrum dominance or high frontier, and it's for America fundamentally to dominate space so no one else can get up there militarily and they control it. But more than that, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and Raytheon and others are building anti-satellite weapons, which is terribly destructive because we're so dependent upon satellites now for peaceful purposes. They're building rods from God, titanium rods that can be launched and take out ships and towns and the like, laser beam weapons, all sorts of extraordinary technology. And, of course, these companies are going to make billions and billions of dollars out of doing this. And it's very provocative because Russia and America still have thousands of nuclear weapons ready to go on hair trigger alert. And the weaponization of space is part and parcel of that whole system, including the missile defense system.
We're talking with Dr. Helen Caldicott, the website nuclearpolicy.org, her new book, War in Heaven, The Arms Race in Outer Space. Dr. Caldicott, in the foreword or introduction, author's introduction to, or preface or whatever it is to your book, you talk about how in 1999 you were invited to a trade show?
No, it wasn't. It was a conference organized
conference.
By a wonderful fellow called Bruce Gagnon, who used to be in the U.S. Air Force. And he talked about this weaponization of space, and I'd never heard it before. I came away absolutely speechless, and I was very worried, and I thought, oh, my God, I've got to get involved in this again.
Yeah, yeah. And so here you are back in the activist fray, and as always, doing a brilliant job of it. The rods from God, operate on the theory that a relatively small mass, if it's traveling at a high enough velocity, can have an enormous impact?
Correct.
So if something comes from outer space, a relatively small conventional projectile could hit the Earth with the power of a nuclear device?
Could do a tremendous amount of damage, yes. That's in the developmental phase at the moment, but definitely they're talking about it. They'll be made of titanium and they'll be about 20 feet long, so they say. But then they're also getting into anti-satellite weapons big time, which is very provocative to the rest of the world. You know, they don't want to lose their satellites for global positioning or for communications or international commerce. I mean, and it's crazy because we're so dependent upon outer space now. For our lives, we don't really realize how much we use it. And yet to put weapons up there is so antithetical to our way of life now.
I'm curious what your thoughts are on how China's recent launch of a ground-based missile to take out an old communications or weather satellite, I forget which it was, that was in the highest of the geosynchronous orbits.
I think it was in the lowest, actually, Tom.
Was it?
Yeah, the highest is 22,300 miles above the Earth. For geosynchronous satellites, yes. But the lowest, I think it was the lowest and easy to get out. Now, why would China do such a crazy thing? Well, for years, China and Russia and the rest of the world have been urging the U.S. to sign a treaty to ban putting weapons in space. I think Israel is one country that's refusing to, but it's mostly the U.S. who will not do it. And I think that China thought, oh, damn it, you know, they'll be provocative and do this to show that, you know, they're a little bit in the game, although they're hardly not at all, to try and provoke America into signing the agreement. But, of course, with the neocons in charge now in the White House, they will say, well, because China did thus and thus, that's why we have to have weapons in space, and that will be used against the common interest of the human race.
When Dwight Eisenhower left office in 1961, his farewell speech warned us of the military-industrial complex. He pointed out that before World War II, the United States, to quote Eisenhower, had no permanent weapons, had no permanent military manufacturing, capability. And that this had come about just, you know, since World War II, this permanent military industrial complex that he warned us against. To what extent is the weaponization of outer space the result of arguably intelligent planning in the Pentagon about, you know, future warfares and forms of warfare and sort of the evolution of warfare versus the companies in the military-industrial complex saying, here's an opportunity for us to increase our revenues. Let's lobby for this and push this through Congress.
It's the latter. You know, someone from Lockheed Martin wrote the foreign policy program for the Republican Party at the Republican Party annual convention just before George Bush was first elected. And when he was elected, 32 people in his administration came straight from the military-industrial complex, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and the like. So they are really determining administration policy, foreign policy, the enlargement of NATO, putting missile defense facilities in Poland and Czechoslovakia, which is very provocative to Russia at the moment, circling China with bases. So really, if you look at it fairly carefully, the military-industrial complex, to a large degree, tends to run the policy of the Pentagon and foreign policy, particularly in this administration, where the State Department has been absolutely sidelined until recently when Condoleezza Rice got in there. If you read my book, The New Nuclear Danger, George Bush's Military-Industrial Complex, I really go into chapter and verse into the wickedness, really, and I'd have to say that, advisedly, of the military-industrial complex. This weaponization of space could, in time, cost the American people $1 trillion. It could provoke a nuclear war now between Russia and America, who still target each other with thousands of nuclear weapons. It could create the most dreadful destabilizing influences, which, you know, could help to destroy life on the planet. So every which way you look at it, it's
what should I say? Crazy, insane, wicked. But, you know, you don't even have a free healthcare system, and your tax dollars should be used for you and not to be sidled off into the military-industrial complex. So, you know, they run Congress because they pay for many of the congressional campaigns.
Yeah, and let us not forget that Don Rumsfeld's job before he became Secretary of Defense was to lobby for the military-industrial complex.
Oh.
We have less than a minute left. Dr. Helen Caldicott, how far along are we, and what should Americans be doing in response to looking at nuclearpolicy.org?
Yeah, we've got time to stop it. You should be reading the book War in Heaven. Become really well-versed and start using your democracy. You know, go and see all your senators and congresspeople who represent you and educate them. Sit them down, make sure they read the book. Talk to them about it. Get into your churches and talk about it. You know, ask me to come and address you. There are so many ways that this wonderful democracy can be used, but first it requires education. And I think, as Jefferson said, an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. So inform yourselves and go for it.
Yeah, there you go. And one of the finest ways to do it is to pick up Helen Caldicott and Craig Eisendrath's new book, War in Heaven, The Arms Race in Outer Space, or check out her website at nuclearpolicy.org. Dr. Helen Caldicott, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, John.
It's always good talking with you.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You. It's 16 minutes past the hour. John's my brother, but close enough. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, the True People's Radio. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to the 6 o'clock news.
At 6 o'clock.
President Bush's surprise message. America is addicted to...
I'm a dream a thousand dreams.
Yes, war, what's it good for? Well, I tell you, Bush apparently thinks a war in Iran would be just a fine idea, and the Democrats in Congress have backed off on trying to stop him. Bernie Sanders, God bless him, introducing legislation into the Senate saying Bush can't attack Iran without congressional approval. We'll see where that goes. Larry Everett, however, a lot of us are going to be out this weekend in cities all across the United States, including Washington, D.C. We'll be out here in Portland, Oregon. And Larry Everett on the line. He's with LarryEverett.com and WorldCan'tWait.org, the author of Oil, Power, and Empire, Iraq, and the U.S. Global Agenda. Larry, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Larry, in a recent article, The Silence of the Dems, you write, journalist Seymour Hersh recently revealed that the Pentagon is continuing an intensive plan for possible bombing attacks against Iran, and that in recent months a special planning group has been established in the offices of the Joint Chiefs of Staff charged with creating a contingency bombing plan for Iran that can be implemented upon orders from the president within 24 hours. The march this weekend on the Pentagon, an effort to stop that?
Absolutely. That's one of the key demands. We need to end the war on Iraq. We need to say no war on Iran. And many of us are raising the slogan that Bush and Cheney need to be impeached, because unless they're out of office, it's clear, and they've made clear, they're going to continue the war and possibly escalate into Iran, which would, just as Dennis Kucinich said the other night, wouldn't simply be a catastrophe. It would be a cataclysm.
Yeah, and I would add that these aren't the only wars. I mean, we are funding to some extent Pakistan, the dictator of Pakistan's war against some of his own people. Certainly a repressive regime. We're funding to a large extent the government of Colombia's war against many of their own people. We're supportive of wars against so-called leftist movements all around the world. These are just the most obvious ones.
Well, and the point that I think people need to understand is this whole war on terror is a rubric for war for greater empire. Obviously, there's terror in the world. Obviously, there are enormous problems in many countries across the world. But the Bush agenda is about trying to seek hegemony and control of these regions. As we've seen, it's not about liberating people in Iraq or any place else. So we have to reject this notion that the United States has the right to preemptively attack whomever it chooses in order to impose its own version of society. And I know, Tom, you've been following this. There's actually, after years of denial that oil has anything to do with this war in Iraq, now we find out there's a new oil bill in process in Iraq that would open Iraq's very rich oil fields up to foreign oil companies like ExxonMobil and others for the first time in 30 years.
Well, as you know,
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves.
Well, exactly. The second largest. And as something I document in my book, has some of the richest fields in the world. And, of course, this is not simply getting Iraq's oil. It's an effort to control global oil, 80% located in the Middle East and Central Asia, not mainly to feed SUVs here, but as a weapon of hegemony. As Dick Cheney has said, if you control oil, you have a stranglehold on the world economy. And as other strategists note, if you control oil, you control those who depend on it, like Russia and China.
We're talking with Larry Everest, the author of Oil, Power, and Empire, Iraq, and the U.S. Global Agenda, and speaking out on behalf of worldcan'twait.org. What exactly is happening this weekend and where?
Well, we're gathering at 23rd and Constitution beginning about 8:30 in the morning.
On which date, Larry?
I'm sorry?
On which date?
On which date? On Saturday, on March 17th.
Tomorrow.
The 17th at 8:30 in the morning. At around 12:30, we're going to be beginning a march to the Pentagon. I think the first time since the 1960s there's been such a march. And it's just a critical turning point moment. This is one of the reasons I allowed myself to be arrested in the Capitol building yesterday, was we've got a situation where, as you mentioned at the top of the show, there's increasing military preparations for war on Iran. The Congress is funding another $100 billion for these wars, and is by removing the provision in this appropriations bill that there be no war on Iran without congressional consideration, really they're giving Bush a green light, especially in light of the fact that he's proven himself willing to launch illegal wars. So
yeah,
this is a
well
time
said. So we need to get out on the streets.
Exactly, that's right.
WorldCan'tWait.org, the website. LarryEverest.com, of course, as well. But WorldCan'tWait.org for information on what's going on this weekend. And it's happening all over the country, in fact. Check out local websites, local activist groups near you, too. There's huge demonstrations in cities all over America. Larry, thanks for being with us. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
Burning up the atmosphere and cutting down the trees, the billion-dollar bombing of a nation on his knees. Anyone not marching to their tune, they call it treason. Everyone says God is on his side. See the lightning, hear the cries of the wounded in a world holy war, mortal thunder from the sky, killing everything they say they're fighting for.
And welcome back. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. Valerie Plame testifying before Congress today. And thanks to our friends over at the Center for American Progress, the Progress Report, thinkprogress.org, there's a couple of audio clips here that I have to share with you. This is Valerie Plame Wilson in her opening testimony before Congress.
My name is Valerie Plame Wilson, and I'm honored to be invited to testify under oath before the Committee on Oversight and Government Reform on the critical issue of safeguarding classified information. I'm grateful for this opportunity to set the record straight. I've served the United States loyally and to the best of my ability as a covert operations officer for the Central Intelligence Agency.
Notice A, she said she recognizes that she's under oath. Unlike all the right-wingers and on the talk machine, the op-ed machines, and right-wing talk radio saying, oh, no, everybody knew that she was not covert, blah-de-blah-de-blah. None of them, obviously, are under oath. She says, I know I'm under oath. I was covert, she continues.
I worked on behalf of the national security of our country, on behalf of the people of the United States, until my name and true affiliation were exposed in the national media on July 14, 2003, after a leak by administration officials.
Now, that leak by administration officials, of course, one that George Bush actually, you know, had something to say about.
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
But she did get out. And here she is continuing her introductory testimony.
Today, I can tell this committee even more. In the run-up to the war with Iraq, I worked in the counterproliferation division of the CIA, still as a covert officer whose affiliation with the CIA was classified. I raced to discover solid intelligence for senior policymakers on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction programs.
Yeah, wow. She says she was working on finding evidence about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction program. Could that be why she and her entire operation were brought down? Because they were not coming up with the information the Bush administration wanted, and it had nothing to do with her husband.
Well, I helped to manage and run secret worldwide operations against this WMD target from CIA headquarters in Washington.
Notice this WMD target, that's singular. And she had just mentioned Iraq.
I also traveled to foreign countries on secret missions to find vital intelligence. I love my career because I love my country. I was proud of the serious responsibilities entrusted to me as a CIA covert operations officer, and I was dedicated to this work. It was not common knowledge on the Georgetown cocktail circuit that everyone knew where I worked. But all of my efforts on behalf of the national security of the United States, all of my training, all of the value of my years of service were abruptly ended when my name and identity were exposed irresponsibly.
So that was her opening statement. So, I mean, she lays it out pretty clearly. But then Elijah Cummings, the congressman from Texas, excuse me, the congressman from Maryland, the Democratic congressman from Maryland, says, let's just get this on the record explicitly, because we've had all this, you know, what, 3.5 years of right-wing spin on this thing. Let's just lay it out so there's no
mistake. Ms. Wilson, first of all, thank you for your service. Ms. Wilson, even today, your work for the CIA is so highly classified that we are not permitted to discuss the details. But we can clarify one crucial point, whether you worked undercover for the CIA. You said that your position was covert, but I've heard others say that you were not covert. In fact, one of the witnesses who will testify a little bit later, Victoria Tensing, is making that same argument. In an op-ed that appeared in the Washington Post on February 18th, she says it quite bluntly. She says, quote, blame was not covert. She worked at CIA headquarters and had not been stationed abroad within 5 years, end of quote. I know there are restrictions on what you can say today, but is Ms. Tenzing's statement correct?
Now, here we get right to the nub of it, because this is one of the definitions of, I guess, one of the legal definitions of covert is, have you traveled incognito outside the United States? I mean, that requires a high level of secrecy. She answers.
Congressman, thank you for the opportunity. I know I'm here under oath. I'm here to say that I was a covert officer of the Central Intelligence Agency. Just like a general is a general, whether he is in the field in Iraq or Afghanistan, when he comes back to the Pentagon, he's still a general. In the same way, covert operations officers who are serving in the field, when they rotate back for a temporary assignment in Washington, they too are still covert.
Is it possible that Ms. Tenzing had more information than you do about your work or had access to secret documents that you don't?
I would find that highly unlikely, Congressman, because much of that information about my career is still classified.
On Wednesday night, I know that Mr. Waxman, our chair, and Congressman Reyes, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, spoke personally with General Hayden, the head of the CIA. And Chairman Waxman told me that General Hayden said clearly and directly, quote, Ms. Wilson was covert, end of quote. There was no doubt about, by the way, the CIA has authorized us to be able to say that. In addition, I understand that Chairman Waxman sent his opening statement over to the CIA to be cleared and to make sure that it was accurate. In it, he said, quote, Ms. Wilson was a covert employee of the CIA, end of quote. Quote, Ms. Wilson was undercover, end of quote. The CIA cleared these statements. I emphasize all of this because I know that there are people who are still trying to suggest that what seems absolutely clear isn't really true and that you weren't covert. And I think one of the things we need to do in this hearing is make sure there isn't any ambiguity on this point. Just three more questions. Do you hold this covert status at the time of the leak? Did you? The covert status at the time of the leak?
Congressman, yes.
Number two, the Identities Protection Act refers to travel outside the United States within the last 5 years. Let me ask you this question. Again, we don't want classified information, dates, locations, or any other details. During the past 5 years, Ms. Plain, from today, did you conduct secret missions overseas?
Yes, I did, Congressman.
Finally, so as to be clear for the record, you were a covert CIA employee, and within the past 5 years from today, you went on secret missions outside the United States. Is that correct?
That is correct, Congressman.
I want to thank you, and I hope this committee now has cleared up the issue of covert, whether Ms. Plain was a covert agent, and I yield back.
I would say so. I would say so. Amazing. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Tom Hartman here with you. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. That was, if you just tuned in, that was Representative Elijah Cummings, a Democrat from Maryland, questioning Valerie Plame Wilson about whether or not she was covert, whether she had traveled overseas, which is apparently one of the triggers for the law that was violated in outing her, which causes me to think that where this committee is going next, they're very carefully constructing the fact that not only was she covert, but this goes beyond the talking points of the right-wing spin machine in the Washington Post. Not only was she covert, but there is a law that specifies that outing a covert agent is an offense which is punishable by prison and fines. And God only knows what else. I mean, certainly impeachment if you're the president. And was this law violated? And it seems to me like they have. David in Seattle. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Wow, we were just glued to C-SPAN and just watching Victoria Townsend, who, by the way, was the same lawyer that was trying to impeach Clinton and was so, she just, oh, God, I was just wanting to throw something at the TV. But the reason why I called was, when George Bush Sr., didn't he pass a law that any of our spies who are outed, the penalty is death? Nobody has mentioned that. And the fact that they're trying to go around and mention the statutes of who's covert and who isn't, and And that kind of gives this impression that, yeah. Oh, because they're not covert, then we can just out their name, you know.
Right. My understanding, David, and I may be wrong on this, and if I am, I'm sure that, you know, wise and alert listeners and folks in the chat room will correct me on this, but I believe that this to be the case, that the law provides for prison time, and it's quite specific about, you know, outing people and not outing people. I believe that law was passed during the administration of Bush Sr., and Bush Sr. gave a speech in which he, as a former CIA director,
mm-hmm.
was saying that the outing of a, and the reason why he was so pleased to sign this law was because the outing of a CIA officer, in his mind, was treason of the worst kind. Now, treason is can be executed for.
That's
but
right.
I don't think that the law says it. I think it was a rhetorical flourish by George Bush Sr. But, David, thanks for the call and raising the issue. At this point, I don't think anybody's calling for anybody to be executed. I'd be very happy with impeachment. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, back with your calls in a minute.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
What a wonderful world.
And thanks so much to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Julian Sukman and Lauren Kirshner at Air America Radio New York, to Ben and Shelby at White Rose Society and RadioPower.org, to Sue Netherkit and the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. What a wonderful world. 9 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Keith in Seattle. Hey, Keith, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I just want to put Victoria Tensing in context. She was just testifying at the Valerie Plame hearing. I guess she helped mm-hmm. write the laws for some of the CIA operatives. But now on PBS in 2005, in relation to, she was speaking in relation to our constitutional rights. What she said was the American public doesn't have the right to know diddly-do.
Really?
That's a direct quote, I swear it.
Oh, my.
Check it out. I just wanted to put that out there.
Ben Franklin was right. You know, those who would surrender a little temporary security, would surrender their liberty for a temporary security deserve neither.
There you go.
Keith, thank you very much. Good to hear from you. Jack in Los Angeles. Hey, Jack.
Yeah, Tom, I was watching that the hearing, too, and I am starting to finally be encouraged that these Congress people are going to do something that's going to lead to impeachment.
I think Henry Waxman is very slowly, very methodically, very carefully building the case for high crimes and misdemeanors.
Yeah, I mean,
that's sure what it looks like to me.
It didn't take long. It wasn't like a long, dragged-out thing either. I mean, he just got some goods, and he's calling it down. So I know that I've been very cynical, and I've called you before saying, these guys are just sitting around. So I think they're making a move, and I just hope it continues until, you know, we at least disarm these people,
yeah.
if not
yeah,
impeach
well.
Them.
Yep, well said, Jack. There was a congressman the other day who said, we've only been in power 6 weeks, and every tree we've shaken, a cat's fallen out of. Can imagine what we'll do in 6 months. And I think it's so true. Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. This weekend, with all the protests, we've always got one problem that we have to get the mainstream media to cover us and so forth.
Yeah.
Well, I have a proposal for people who are not near protests. Is do decentralized protests. Go to your street corners so that people drive by and see people like every 10 blocks protesting.
That's right.
And we can bypass the media and all those people live in rural areas and everything. You can show that you care about what's going on.
Yep. Make a sign, stand out on the corner. Good suggestion, Doug, or Jeff. Thank you very much. Doug in Staten Island. Hey, Doug.
That was a great, great choice the gentleman just made, you know, suggestion.
Yeah.
Listen,
yeah.
Two key things. The last thing I'd like to puncture a hole, if you just give me 45 seconds, about Robe not being sure of her status and that somehow posits a mitigating factor.
Sure.
You look at the interview with Matt Cooper, Tim Russett, and also his article, What I Told the Grand Jury. That was July 25th, 2005. Mm-hmm. Just bear me out. So did Roe leak Plame's name to me or tell me she was covert? No. Was it through my conversation with Rove that I learned for the first time that Wilson's wife worked at the CIA and may have been responsible for sending him? Yes. Did Rove say that she worked at the agency on WMD? Yes. And now the next thing is key here, Tom. When he said things would be declassified soon, was that in itself impermissible? I don't know. When you combine that with Rove's ending his conversation by saying, I've already said too much, and also you remember that Rove had been bumped up. He was now deputy security of staff. He had a senior-level national security position and clearance. He was, in fact, in charge of coordinating the National Security Council and the Homeland Security Council. And the last point is Security Form 312. This is a form, Tom, which every person who works in the West Wing has to sign in regards to the executive orders, which were discussed at the hearing. It says in part, quote, before confirming the accuracy of what appears in the public source, the signer of this form, Security Form 312, must confirm through an authorized official that the information has, in fact, been declassified. If it has not, confirmation of its accuracy is also an unauthorized disclosure. So to suggest that Mr. Rove did not have any idea about her status and whether it was an unauthorized leak is just, it is silly on its presence.
Yeah. Yeah, well said, Doug, well said. And, of course...
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Now, at the same time, Fox is weighing on this, according to George in Queens, New York. Hey, George.
Tom, I just thought you'd like to know that all the mainstream websites are the main coverage is of the Valerie Plame hearing. Fox's, their two big stories are the contents of Anna Nicole's medicine cabinet and terrorist school bus drivers.
Terrorist school bus drivers?
Yeah.
Oh no, I can hear it now. Sheikh Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, were you planning on blowing up a school bus? Yes, I was. Another one. Amazing. Thank you very much. Jamie in Columbia, South Carolina, just a few seconds before we have to wrap up the show. Jamie, what's up?
Oh, yes, sir. I just wanted to know what you thought of the crisis impending with Patrick Leahy subpoenaing Karl Rove and Karl Rove telling CBS sources that he will not show up under any circumstances.
Yeah, it probably will go to the Supreme Court, although there was a precedent set. Rove is not claiming attorney-client privilege, but close to it in the Clinton case, when Clinton's lawyer was successfully subpoenaed and questioned by Ken Starr. So, I mean, you know, there is precedent, but I'm guessing that this will probably end up before the Supreme Court. The question is whether they can move it really, really fast, and I think that that's what they're going to try and do. So, you know, time will tell, Jamie. Time will tell. You know, stay tuned, as they say in the radio business. Coming up on Monday's program on Air America here, the Tom Hartman program, Richard Viguerie is here on his new book, Conservatives Betrayed, How George W. Bush and Other Big Government Republicans Hijacked the Conservative... They're all upset about this. The continuing saga of the Gonzalez Purge Gate and the best of the rest of the news, and that and more in your calls here on the Tom Hartman radio program. And remember, my friends, as you have a great weekend and you get out there and you do your protest, whether it's on a street corner or one of the big ones, remember, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you Monday. Have a great...
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.